On this episode of The Check Down, we break down week six and talk about how parity hurts the Pac-12. We give our big boy pants and little dumper awards for the week and then dissect and make predictions for week seven, including two huge divisional games, UW at Oregon and Colorado at USC. We do our last segment of Gab and Golf for a while and then jump into some NFL talk. And of course, the Blitz Package heats up as we debate who is the better narrator, Morgan Freeman or Sam Elliott, and discuss some of our adventures from my bachelor party this past weekend. But first, here's your jam of the week. This is Lil Wayne with On Fire. So, we should probably apologize for missing last week. However, it was for good reason. We did have a pretty epic weekend. It was my bachelor party, which was a lot of fun. But I just, one big observation from the weekend was that you know you're getting old and you have a bit of an older crowd, more married guys, more dads sort of thing. When a large majority of the discussion is around if you wear sunscreen, if you get blood drawn every year, and if you have life insurance. And we spent a lot of time talking about those things.
I feel like I might have brought those up when I was looking at my partner from the Olympics.
Yeah.
I was feeling that sunshine, and I was like, hey, man, you got to be careful. So that's where it started. Man.
It did. That is exactly where it started. But honestly, a great time. We did watch a couple of the games, which was fun. We got to watch the fight, which was absolutely insane.
Amazing.
And we made it out alive with that karaoke bar, which was good news for us. So overall, a great weekend. But it appears that the only thing this past weekend that was rougher than all the pressure I put on my liver was how the Pac-12 schools from California performed. Mm. Not a good showing by the California schools this weekend, other than USC, who didn't play, which good for them, but UCLA lost, Stanford lost, and Cal lost. So quick rundown of the scores. Number 10, Washington squeaked by UCLA, 31-24. Utah beat Stanford in a huge game, 40-21. Colorado beat Arizona State, 28-21. Washington State pulled out late, but ended up winning 56-37. And Arizona won 24-17. So just a quick thought in general about this. I feel like this happens every year where there's so much parity in the Pac-12. And parity is fun to a certain extent because from game to game, you never really know who's going to win, right? Like any of those games that I just read off could have went either way. Maybe Stanford was a heavy favorite in Washington, but obviously Utah won. And then UCLA kept it close, but I feel like parity in the grand scheme of things hurts the overall conference. Like, we want our top dogs to just go in and obliterate the bottom tier of the conference, but every year that's not what happens. And I think this week in particular, as well as some other teams around the country losing who were in our non-conference schedule, our college football playoff hopes are getting bleaker and bleaker.
Yeah, it's not looking good. I mean, the good news is if you're a fan of a team, whatever team you're a fan of, they have a chance to win that division, whether it's the North or the South for the most part. The North is a little bit more lopsided, but any team you're a fan of in the South division has a chance to win the South almost every year.
Yeah, true.
Which, obviously, as a USC fan, is great, right? You're not having the best season. You still have a chance to, you know, have a couple of losses in conference and still fight for that conference championship, which is great, but you're right. I think it has more to do with the fact that our top teams aren't as good as the other conference's top teams than the bottom teams being that much better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at the end of the day, like, if you put the bottom couple teams in the the Big 12 or the SEC against an Oregon State or UCLA might be a pretty close matchup. I just don't think that the Stanfords and the Oregons and the USCs as of late and the Washingtons have been as good as the Alabamas and the Clemsons and the Ohio States, and that's a bummer.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I just, for whatever reason, I don't know what the answer is. We need to get somebody on that can give us the answer.
Right. Yeah, I don't know the answer either, unfortunately. But I don't know. I mean, I think that hopefully we're trending in the right direction. A lot of good coaches in the Pac-12 now, which is huge. It's a huge start. I do think the talent on, you know, the West Coast is great, and I think we're hopefully starting to pull some kids from around. And, you know, as big-time programs like USC and UCLA, now that they have coaches and some clout behind them, can hopefully recruit a little bit better. If Washington can stay at the top and Oregon can continue to have a really fun offense to watch, hopefully recruiting continues to come and they start and they continue to get those top-tier, you know, five-star, top 300 guys every year, and hopefully that'll start to balance things out. But for right now, like you said, our top tier, we're fighting for every year, hopefully one of them just can squeak into the Final Four, as opposed to like every year, you know, whoever makes it out of the SEC is the top dog. And that's just the way it is right now. And unfortunately, I feel like this week in general kind of hurt us because of how close UCLA kept it against Washington, Utah upsetting Stanford, you know, ASU and Colorado being close. It's just, it's not a good look in general for the whole conference.
Yeah, we really don't have those blowout victories that other conferences seem to have.
Mm-hmm.
And when those, you know, the top five schools in the country play the bottom half of their conference, it's just an absolute, it's 65-3. Like, right. you don't see that in the Pac-12. And I think it's mainly in a difference in recruiting style and what the focus is, at least from what I've seen in the Pac-12. It seems like our skill positions are there. The quarterbacks are good. The wide receivers are good, even though running backs can hold up. But when I've seen Pac-12 teams play the dominant teams from the other conferences, it seems like we get dominated on the line of scrimmage.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, so maybe those teams, the Alabamas and the Clemsons, the Ohio States, are putting a lot of emphasis from a recruiting perspective on making that defensive line just a wall and the offensive line just unstoppable. And maybe, you know, we're putting that, you know, in the back seat, and that's not the way we should, you know, look at it.
Right. And we've talked about it before on the podcast. The Pac-12 has great quarterbacks. Right, I mean, like one of the, if not the top quarterback for the NFL draft coming up, and then you add it, you throw in Gardner Minshew, you throw in young guys like DTR from UCLA. Obviously, we've talked a lot about our guy JT Daniels at USC, but there's a lot of talent at the quarterback position, I feel like, in the Pac-12, and a lot of talent at the skill positions. But like you said, in the trenches, for whatever reason, we just haven't matched up over the last couple of years, and hopefully, we can turn that around a little bit moving forward. But as far as last week's games, which one stands out to you the most?
I mean, the easiest choice is obviously the Utah-Stanford game.
Right.
I mean, that was just shocking. I can't believe they got dominated like they got dominated at home in Palo Alto. I mean, I just had so much more faith in them. And I don't know if it's, you know, partially a hangover from that loss they took at Notre Dame, which was a beating as well. So it's crazy to think 2 weeks ago, I'm sitting here saying, and I'm probably sure other people were saying, you know, this team has a chance to not only win the Pac-12, but go to the college football playoff. Now they just got decimated 2 weeks straight.
I know. Terrible. So, and I feel like I'm a little bit to blame for that because I wasn't until 2 weeks ago finally jumped on the Stanford train. If you remember the first like 4 weeks of the season, I was like, I don't know, I'm a little skeptical playing jump ball with JJ Arcega-Whiteside, offensive line doesn't look as good. And then they finally beat Oregon in that come from behind. And I was like, all right, I'm on the train. And since I've jumped on the train two losses in a row, I got to get my ass off the train because that is not good news for us.
The train has gone off the tracks since you got on it.
Exactly. Exactly. So yeah, I agree. And we actually did watch some of that game, too, so we can talk a little bit about it. But you know what? Utah does look pretty good, and it's 2 weeks in a row of looking decent offensively. And obviously, they have one of the best defenses in the Pac-12 as well as the nation. I mean, they're only giving up like 75 yards a game on the ground and only like 18 points total. So they are good. I don't think anybody really expected that. I think maybe it was close. I think people were thinking it would be close, but not a win. Except if you ask Scott Mathewson, he was all about that upset all this whole weekend. So he claims that he knew it was coming the whole time.
He did, actually.
He did.
That's all. Props to him. I mean, if you look at their schedule too, Utah, it's not super tough. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've gone through a couple really tough games in Washington State and Washington, which they lost.
Yeah.
But outside of that, you have USC, but they have them at home. They have Arizona State at Arizona State. They're kind of hit and miss. Oregon comes to Utah.
Mm-hmm.
They go to Colorado, which is actually a close trip for them, the only team that, you know, has a quick trip to Colorado. So,
right.
I mean, they have a chance to, you know, have a really good year and I think still compete for the South just because there's so many big games left, including SC versus Colorado this weekend.
Agreed. Which is a huge game, and we'll get to that, obviously. But, you know, Colorado continues to roll, 5-0 now, 2-0 in Pac-12 play. And they're looking really good on offense, obviously. The Herm train in Tempe is starting to sputter and kind of go off the rails, it seems, a little bit, but
everything's a train.
That's a good point. Everything's a train. Oh man. Yeah, and then Washington State is really good offensively, but they gave up 37 points to Oregon State, who I know we talked about this and they had one down week, but maybe they really do have a good run game. I mean, what's his name? Jamar Jefferson went for like 135 yards and four touchdowns or something like that. 138 yards, four touchdowns on 25 carries. So, you know,
135 yards is a bad game for him,
too. I know. But four touchdowns, that's pretty impressive. Yeah, it's pretty impressive. So, you know, he was just outshined. Well, the problem with that game, and I saw a little bit about at the beginning of that game, actually, I thought Washington State was going to crush him because it started off 14-0 in like the blink of an eye. Washington State got the kickoff, went down, ran like six plays. Minshew was just dicing them up. And then they scored, kicked off. Oregon State had it, blocked punt for a touchdown. So like, just like that, it was 14-0. And it's like, oh, here we go again. You know, Oregon State's just really that bad. But then they fought, they, you know, climbed back in. And it wasn't until, you know, middle to beginning of the fourth quarter that Washington State finally started to kind of pull it out. So Oregon State maybe is on the rise a little bit. They have a lot of trouble on defense. You know, obviously their offense isn't great aside from the run game, but I think maybe in a year or two, they might be coming around if they can get some of those defensive things figured out.
Yeah. Corvallis is a tough place to play. So they're always going to have a, you know, slight advantage at home if they could just figure out how to beat the teams that are geographically close to them, which is the biggest competition, right? In Washington and Oregon. So,
right.
I mean, looking at Washington State too, Gardner Minshew's just been great, and that team continues to put up a crazy amount of points, it seems like, every single game.
Yeah, agreed.
But their schedule coming up is just...
It's brutal.
Brutal.
It's brutal.
Oregon at home, at Stanford, Cal at home, at Colorado, Arizona at home, and then Washington at home.
Yeah, that's rough.
Like, they could lose four of those games.
Yep.
And still play pretty well.
Yeah, true. It's a good point.
So,
and then, you know, Arizona and Cal... To be honest, I didn't see much of the game, but I feel like those teams are pretty even. So that seems, you know, right to me, that kind of one touchdown score. Arizona, from what I've read and the highlights that I've seen, obviously offensively were not very good at all. They actually had two pick sixes returned for touchdowns. So 14 of their 24 points were interceptions returned for touchdowns. And Cal had four turnovers in the second half.
Good thing we didn't watch that game.
Yeah, exactly. Three interceptions and a fumble. So that's kind of how that went. And then I think the most disappointing, like I said earlier, was Washington over UCLA. You want Washington, who's kind of right on the border, still kind of in contention and discussion of maybe being a team, like I said, to just mop the floor with the Bruins, who are at the bottom of the whole conference, but for sure the South. And they didn't. They won 31-24. So unfortunately, despite getting the win, I don't think all wins are created equal, and this is one that I think will eventually hurt them down the road and in the discussion as we get closer to the playoff.
No, we have learned over the last few years in the college football playoff committee's eyes, all wins are definitely not created
equal. Yeah.
It's not about getting that dash in the win column, that one in the win column. It's you need to look clean,
you need
to win by 40, and you gotta. You don't have to beat the teams you're supposed to beat. You need to crush them.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's important. And it's a bummer because if you're sitting there with one or two losses like somebody else, and those wins that they had just were cleaner and they won by 10 more points, that could be the difference. So a game like this is tough. I mean, the stats aren't horrible on Washington's side, but they should have blown out UCLA.
And I will say we did see a little bit of this game too in between Beer Olympic events, and UCLA's offense didn't look terrible. I think their quarterback, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, true freshman, is kind of making some big strides with that offense. And they found a run game in Kelly, who's now their running back 2 weeks in a row, gone over 110 yards, I believe. So they got a little bit of a run game. Obviously, Chip Kelly is kind of a master on the offensive side of the ball. But their biggest concern the last couple of years has been their defense is terrible. I think their leading tackler is their safety, which is never a good thing, which means front seven is not making the tackles, and so
that means people are getting to the safety.
Yeah, exactly. So that's not a good sign. But I do think maybe they're making some strides as well on the offensive side of the ball. And when you can score a lot of points, you never know what can happen, right? I mean, we see that in the Big 12 every week. Basically, it's just kind of whoever has the ball last and can put up the most points through the air for the most part in that conference.
Well, I will tip my hat and say great moral victory, UCLA.
Yes. They deserve it.
I think in this case, it's actually validated.
I think it's well deserved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. I think we're not for moral victories, but if we ever had to lean on the side of giving someone credit for a moral victory, this might be it.
So I feel like good teams don't deserve moral victories, because if you're good, got to win.
Good point.
Bad teams, it's all about the moral victories. Like the Browns when they tied the Steelers, yep. Week one, that was a moral victory.
Hey, you know that the Browns right now have the same exact record as the Steelers, 2-2-1.
Gosh, that's crazy.
That is crazy.
Baker, man, just insane. Tearing it up, my boy.
We'll get to that a little later. Anyways, let's kind of wrap up week six with our Big Boy Pants Awards and our Little Dumper Awards. So why don't you hit us with your Big Boy Pants Award?
So I'm sticking to the biggest game of the weekend as far as the Pac-12 goes. Utah crushing Stanford at Stanford. I got to give Tyler Huntley tons of credit. Played a super, super clean football game against a good Stanford defense. 17 of 21, 199 yards and one touchdown, zero picks. Mm-hmm. So great game. And then a balanced offense on the other side, right? Zach Moss running back, 20 carries, 160 yards, 8 yards a carry and two touchdowns, right? So
jeez.
Great balance from Utah, great offense, super clean game against a Stanford team that I always say never, you know, makes a ton of mistakes. So you have to play clean football to win. Both of those guys deserve a ton of credit because they both, you know, stepped up and provided that game that they needed to pull that out.
Yeah, and I mean, they've been on the discussion all year about when they put it together, they're scary offensively because Huntley's athletic. He can move around. He can run. He can make most throws. And Zach Moss is, I don't know if you've seen that guy on TV, but he is a beast. Like, he's built like a truck. I would not want to tackle him. I wouldn't tackle him. I would let him score. I would not want to be UCLA safety who has to make that tackle every time when he breaks through the front seven. I'm telling you, he's a monster. And like, not necessarily like as far as being super tall, but just like jacked. So very athletic, but we've talked about them all year as far as being when they put it together offensively, they could be scary good. And I think the last 2 weeks they have, even though they lost last week against Washington State, but they kept it close and they did what they could. And I think played the best so far against Washington State, aside from, I know they lost to USC, but I still think Washington State outplayed USC. They just blocked a field goal at the end to not go to OT. But yeah, so that's that. So I'm staying one of mine for my Big Boy Pants Awards in that same game, but I'm on the defensive side of it. One of the biggest plays of the game was Jalen Johnson intercepted a pass on the 1 yard line and took it back 99 yards for a touchdown. They tried to do their just have JJ Arcega-Whiteside post up and throw it to him up top, and Jalen Johnson knew it was coming, undercut it, didn't let him box out, snagged it. Darted down the sideline, huge play. So he ended the game with 7 tackles in that pick six. The other one, and you got to stay true, 5-0, the only undefeated team in the conference. 5-0 Buffs are being led by one of the most exciting and dynamic players in the whole country, and that is Laviska Shenault. He ended with 13 catches, 127 yards, and 2 TDs, and then added another 2 touchdowns on the ground. And he is right now third in the nation in receptions with 51, third in the nation with receiving yards at 708. And he is just absolutely destroying defenses. And you combine him with Steven Montez, who is on the year. This is absolutely insane. On the year, His completion percentage is like just under 75 or just over 75. 75.2% completion percentage, which is insane. I mean, that's incredible. Wow. Yeah. So,
that's
and they're
crazy.
So, you know, I think it's obviously a huge, huge performance by Chenault in a game to help them stay undefeated. So let's move on maybe to now the not so great performances, our little dumper awards for those who forgot, the people who maybe didn't have the best weeks. I can start if you want. And let's not forget, little dumper award number one. So I'm going with the Washington Huskies for what we've already kind of talked about. When you're 10th in the nation and you're really the only conference or team in the conference left for a playoff shot, aside from Colorado, but I just don't think Colorado can stay undefeated. And I think as soon as they lose, they're no longer in the discussion. I think if Washington can win out and their only loss being at Auburn, you know, they could maybe still get put in that fourth spot. But when you only beat UCLA by 7 points, you're hurting yourself. And I think in general, the whole Huskies get my little dumper award this week. What about you?
Solid choice. I am sticking with the game that I'm just going to continue to talk about. And I have to give KJ Costello a super hard time for doing what I told him not to do.
Uh-huh.
Just make mistakes.
KJ Costello. Yeah.
KJ Costello, 26 of 41, 381, a touchdown, two picks.
Oh, yeah.
What Stanford does best is they play clean football, and they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
They forced the issue, tried to do stuff that they're comfortable with, and it ended up, you know, costing them a big-time loss when they needed to bounce back after they got shattered by Notre Dame. So very uncharacteristic from how he's played to this point.
Yep.
So little dumper goes to him.
A little dumper. There you go. So that is our little dumper awards. It's not that we don't love those people that receive the little dumper awards. It's just sometimes we have a down day, you know? Kind of like my Beer Olympics showing. I was the little dumper of the Beer Olympics showing, but I had an excuse, I feel like.
Well, it's like Tiger at the golf course. Everybody's showing up to play.
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah.
You get everybody's best cornhole game, everybody's best corners game.
Yep.
Like, I was fired up. Like, I was, you know, I was just, like, high-fiving for other people's games. I was chest-bumping my partner.
You're right. No, I know. I saw. And we had an epic cornhole battle and spike ball battle. We did.
Yeah, we did.
Couple of huge – and I was so sore, by the way.
Oh, dude, I have bruises. Like, it's like I played in a tackle football game. Like, I'm bruised on hips.
Yep.
And, like, I feel like I ran an Iron Man. I'm destroyed.
No, I feel you. I feel the same way. But anyways, let's move on to week 7. Some big matchups here in week 7, which I'm pretty excited about. I'll run through the list real quick, and then we'll kind of break down each game. So 7 p.m. Friday night, Arizona at Utah. Then we get into Saturday. We have an afternoon game, which is huge because it is Washington at Oregon.
Ooh.
Yep. So the nation will be able to watch that one. No more Pac-12 after dark for the biggest game of the year so far.
Finally.
Yep. And then in the late afternoon, UCLA plays at Cal. And then Saturday night, Pac-12 after dark, Colorado at the Coliseum against the Trojans.
I love the Pac-12 after dark. That's fantastic.
So let's kind of just run through and make our predictions for these games. First one, Arizona. Let's start with Arizona at Utah. Who do you like? What do you see? What are the keys to this game?
So Utah coming off a huge win. So they're at home. It is a late night game. On paper, you would think that Utah would destroy Arizona just the way that they've been playing and the way Arizona and Khalil Tate has just been underwhelming all year.
Uh-huh.
And one thing I wanted to look at was, hold on a second, what their schedule looks like.
While you're doing that, Utah is 14-point favorites right now.
Okay. So I just think that this is a possible trap game.
Mm.
And this is one of those games where you're coming off a big win, and they have USC at home the game after, which isn't a gigantic game as far as some of the teams that they could be playing in the Pac-12. So I don't think it's necessarily a trap game, but look out when you come off a big win. But I am going to take Utah.
Okay. I'm also going to take Utah. I know we've talked a little bit about it already, but I think their offense is up and rolling now. You got Tyler Huntley and Zach Moss doing what they do. And then you throw that on, and the defense kind of not really talked about, only because they don't create a whole lot of turnovers, but they just play so solid. 17 points a game, like I said, 75 on the ground. So I think that this is a true offense versus defense game in that Arizona doesn't have really a defense either, but their offense is supposed to be pretty explosive in Khalil Tate and J.J. Taylor. And so I am thinking that Utah's defense steps up again, holds the Wildcats in check, and Utah pulls it out as well. What about, do you think they beat the spread?
No.
Okay. So you're going Arizona beats the spread. I think Utah does. I think it's like a 17-point game. Let's do UCLA at Cal.
UCLA at Cal.
What? Sounds pretty interesting, right? That'd be a good one.
Sounds awful. Yeah, I don't know. Cal? I mean, I think Cal's better than they played, you know, at Arizona. So I think that they have a bounce back game. They're at home. Mm-hmm. It's in Berkeley. So I think that I'm going to take Cal just because UCLA hasn't given me any confidence that they can beat anybody.
Okay.
Because they haven't, you know.
Fair. All right. So you're going Cal. They're 7.5-point favorites. This is a game that I am eerily close to picking UCLA. Eerily close. Two games in a row, they have been winning or very close in the third quarter and even in the fourth quarter this week, and they just couldn't close it out. And I think that is youth, especially on the offensive side with a true freshman quarterback and a new offense. And I think, oh, man, I'm going UCLA.
Oh,
I'm picking UCLA. I know we had talked a little bit about them going 0-12, but I don't think it's going to happen. And when I look at the schedule, this one seems to be their best shot.
Yeah, they got to get up for this one.
They got to. Because I don't.
got to get up for this one.
So I'm going UCLA. I got to. What I saw from DTR and what I've seen throughout his progression through the season, I really like it. And Cal is struggling at the quarterback position. I bet you can't even name Cal's quarterback right now.
No.
Exactly. Because they've tried three. It was supposed to be Ross Bowers. He kind of fell to the wayside, and then there's two guys that are battling it out, Garbers, and now they've been playing more recently Brandon McIlwain, who's much more of a passer. He's a South Carolina transfer, but he threw three interceptions in the second half last week and looked like remember when I was shooting overhand sky hooks at cornhole? That's what it kind of looked like coming out of his hand. Like, just terrible decisions. So
throwing it up for grabs.
So unless they figure that out, if UCLA can contain him and not let him run because he rushed for over 100 yards, I think they have a shot, to be honest with you. But that's the question. So that's what I'm banking on. I think UCLA finally steps up, puts one game somewhat completely together, and I think they pull out the win. Let's go to, which game do you find more important? Washington at Oregon or Colorado at USC?
Well, first of all, I don't think any of these teams have a chance at the college football playoff. So, unfortunately. So, I think it's equally important for the North in the Washington-Oregon matchup.
You don't think Washington does? Not at all?
I don't see it happening. No.
Yeah, and they did have a pretty crushing defeat when Mississippi State crushed Auburn this past weekend.
And I think one of the things that's tough about it is when you have a team like Notre Dame playing as well as they're playing,
true.
All of a sudden there's a sixth conference.
Yeah, the independent.
Right? So you normally have a power five and you're like, okay, as long as one of the conferences just kind of shits the bed.
Right.
We just have to be one of the other four. Well, now Notre Dame steps in, and if they keep playing like they're playing, then two of the other power five conferences are not going to get somebody in.
Yep.
That's a tough ask, right? Oklahoma lost, which is big.
Huge game, by the way. That was incredible.
That was incredible. But
yeah,
they made that game really close. And so if they win out, that one loss that they have it's a neutral site-ish game that came down to a last-second field goal is not going to look that bad.
True. True.
So, but obviously, because Washington has the biggest hopes for the Pac-12 or for the college football playoff, that game against Oregon is probably the biggest game. I don't think anybody's given Colorado any credit to this point.
Yeah, unfortunately. I think even us. I mean, I'm even talking about I don't think they even have a shot, and they're the only undefeated team in the country. Or not in the country, in the conference, sorry.
They're ranked 19th.
I know.
Like, no love
at all. Yeah, no love. But they have had pretty easy schedule.
Yeah, but look at Oklahoma.
True.
Oklahoma only they lost a game. They only dropped to 11.
Really?
And who have they beat? UCLA, Iowa State.
Yeah.
Like they haven't beat anybody. Baylor, like they haven't beat anybody because they have the reputation.
True.
People give them credit, and they drop a game, only drop 4 spots.
It's a good point. It's a good point.
It's a rough pull for Colorado.
Yeah. True. Okay. So let's start with the Washington Oregon game. Who do you like in this one?
I like Oregon.
Woo!
All the way, and I'm not even hesitating. I think Oregon is legit. Justin Herbert's legit. I think Washington is overrated. I've said that all year long.
Yeah.
And this is my time to shine. I'm terrible at predictions. So get this one for me, Oregon. Get it.
So we're on the same boat here. For a couple reasons. One,
you better be on the boat. Let me tell you, it's a train.
You're right. Why am I talking about so much transportation tonight? I don't understand why transportation is kind of crawling into this podcast. But so here's the reasons that I think. It's in Autzen Stadium, and we saw what happens in Autzen Stadium when Stanford comes to town. And if Oregon just didn't completely fall apart in the last quarter and a half against them, they would still be undefeated right now too, with some serious talk about them being a playoff team. Unfortunately, that's not what happened. But Autzen Stadium, one of the toughest places to play. Second, I think Oregon has a very underrated defense. And I was looking at the stats today. They're tied for third in the conference with 16 sacks through 5 games. And they've had 3 defensive touchdowns, 2 pick sixes and a fumble recovery. And I think that Washington's offense, like you've said multiple times, you don't like Jake Browning. I don't think that they're as explosive as they'll need to be against an Oregon offense that is extremely explosive.
Yes.
I think Justin Herbert and crew is just their offense is so good about just taking what they give you, right? Like if you're going to just give up short little dumps all day, guess what? They're just going to take short little dumps until you adjust, and then they'll move on and adjust with you. And I think that's what's so great about Justin Herbert is he doesn't really force anything. He has every once in a while, but for the most part, he'll read defenses and he'll just hit the open man, which is great. And I think he's going to have to do that against Washington's defense, who's really good. But I think the combination of an explosive offense with an underrated defense in Autzen Stadium, let's go Ducks. I'm going Ducks.
The question is, how do they prepare for such an early morning game? I mean, they're going to have to... Like,
what is it, 12:30 or 1:30?
It's 12:30. I mean, they're going to have to get there at like 9 a.m. That's going to be nuts.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good point. When we used to play in college, if we had like 1 p.m. games, we'd have to get there like 2.5, almost, 3 hours early. So we'd be there around 9, 10, somewhere in there.
That's brutal.
Yeah, it is brutal. All right, so we both went with Oregon. Woo! Okay, last one for you, Colorado. Number 19, Colorado at USC. Well, just to tell you, so before you pick, USC is currently a 7-point favorite.
Yeah, I mean, I'm taking the Trojans. I don't think they cover that. I think it's close. Colorado's going to come in fired up. This is a prove to the country that you're good type of football game, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is the game that's going to get them on the map. They probably, if they win, can jump up at least 5 or 6 spots in the rankings because this is going to be their first big time win, and it's on the road.
Right.
I think that USC pulls it out by 3 or 4 just because they're coming off a bye week. They're going to be rested. I think that they were very unhappy with how they played, especially defensively against Arizona at Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that defense is really going to pick it up and give Montez and that offense, a harder time than they've had this year, because I think coming off a bye week, USC is going to be by far the toughest opponent that they've faced.
Okay, fair. Well, I'm going in the complete opposite direction. I'm going Buffs. So here's why. When I look at teams and I try and make predictions, I look at third down efficiency, red zone efficiency, turnover margin. And at this point, Colorado is better in every category than the Trojans. Every single one. Offensively, defensively, better turnover margin, better third down, better red zone, everything. The only thing that USC has up to this point against Colorado is talent, right? You match up those two and you would say USC has a much better talented roster from top to bottom. But Steven Montez has proven to be the best, if not second best, or quarterback in the country or in the conference right now. I keep saying country too. What is happening? Long weekend. My brain's still not totally turned back on. But you pair him with the guy who's currently fourth in Heisman, in Laviska Shenault. I think Colorado's got a lot more talent than people give him credit for. So I'm going with the Buffs, but I think it's going to be really close. I don't think it's going to be I think it'll be like a field goal type game.
That's totally fair.
Yeah. I'm really excited. I think that's going to be a great game.
I think it's going to be a great game, too. I wish I could attend.
Yeah, but...
Even though it is Pac-12 after dark.
Oh, anyways, any other comments, concerns, criticisms about the Pac-12 before we move on to a little Ryder Cup discussion?
Nope, I'm excited for this week. This week is... Those two games are huge, man. We're really going to see who's who going into the last half of the year.
Agreed. Agreed. All right, well, let's move on to some Ryder Cup. I know we missed it talking about it last week, but why don't you fill us in quickly on what is happening in, or what happened at the Ryder Cup, and what were the main stories coming out of that?
Well, I've been stewing over it for about 10 days now, whatever it's been since it happened.
It's probably good we didn't talk about it last week.
Yeah, a little more anger involved. But USA took over probably one of the most talented rosters that they've taken at least to European soil to leg off Nacional. And they lost by six or seven, whatever the final ended up being. And they got dominated. And from what I watched, they couldn't drive the ball in the fairway and they couldn't make putts.
Mm-hmm.
And Friday, they came out and won three of the four opening, either four ball or foursomes matches. And then the next three sessions.
Mm-hmm. You're speaking French. Sessions,
yeah. They got destroyed, and it didn't seem like they were into it, and they were disinterested, and the Europeans just seemed to make every freaking 10-footer you put in front of them. So it's just disappointing, man. I don't have a ton to say except for the fact that I didn't really like the course because it seemed to be set up really, really well for the European team, which obviously that's their right to do. And when Europeans come here, we do the same. But our bomb and gouge style that Brooks Koepka and DJ and Tony Finau and these guys play just didn't work.
Yeah.
There was a couple bright spots. Tony Finau, our boy. We talk about him all year.
Yeah.
He was great. Right? He had a fantastic Ryder Cup. He's the last captain's pick, and I think he went 3-1. So, or 2-1. So he had a good week. Tiger and Phil were winless.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about killing the momentum for the Thanksgiving match.
I know, right? Jeez.
It's like watching two 20 handicaps play against each other. No offense, Shaky.
Yeah.
Shaky gun in the West.
Oh, man. Yeah, so not the result we were looking for, and I know we talked about it a little bit last week, but just a really disappointing end, too. Like, it was well within hand. Ricky Fowler spent more time in the water than Michael Phelps. We had Phil Mickelson hook one into the water and basically concede his game because he was already down three holes with four to go, and he just put one right in the water. So,
To finish the whole tournament.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it was over at that point.
Like, what a way for the U.S. to concede the match is hook a ball into the drink on a par three and then just be like, yeah, that's good enough. You guys can have it.
Like,
you're not even going to fight for a point. That was so disappointing.
So do you have any update or any story on what actually happened between Brooks Koepka and DJ? Did they get into a fight after?
Yeah, so apparently in the team room, somebody had reported that they got into a scuffle and they had to be separated.
Right.
And then one source came out and said, yeah, that actually happened, and then a bunch of people are denying it. I don't know if we'll ever get to the bottom of it, but Brooks Koepka came out and said, no, we're best friends.
Yeah.
We train together and play together all the time. That's absolute nonsense. So who knows what the truth is, but the moral of the story is these guys on the USA team cannot figure out how to play team golf.
Well, and my thing is, even if they did get in a fight, like, what does it matter? I'm sure it was more of a fit of passion, right? Like, they're not throwing haymakers at each other. If they got into an argument about getting their butts kicked by the European team, like, you would hope there would be some discussion around that, right? Like, you don't want everyone going in there just, like, slapping hands, giving each other high fives, saying, like, hey, guys, we just got our ass kicked. Let's go get some baguettes and be okay with that. Like, no, you don't want that, right? Like, you want a little bit of heat, a little bit of frustration, and sometimes it boils over, and I think, you know, I can't imagine that it was super aggressive and super over the top, but if something comes out to prove that it was, that's also kind of awesome.
So what I'm trying to figure out is if Brooks and DJ start throwing blows, who's breaking those guys up? Like, rookie's not jumping in there going, come on, bring it up, guys. Like, he's going to get swatted to the wall like a fly. JT's a small dude. Justin's a small dude. Like, we don't have a, you know, gigantic team, but those two guys are monsters. So that would be an interesting fight in the locker room.
If I had to pick who it would be, I think my two go-to would be Patrick Reed, simply by shape of body, because I feel like he's got the most mass to throw around.
Because he's round?
Yeah. And Phil Mickelson because of old man strength.
Oh, that's true. That's a good point. I mean,
I feel like Tiger wasn't even around for that. He was probably still out putting, practicing. He just like didn't even want to talk seriously to anyone.
Tiger can't risk injury at this point.
That's true.
I don't want you breaking up any fights, dude.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like Phil Mickelson's been in some bar fights. I can see that.
He's a little loose.
Yeah.
He likes to go out there and have a good time.
Yeah, you know. I think he might be able to do that. Anyways, it's a good question. I don't know, because those are both some pretty big individuals, which I'm not trying to get in the way of that, for sure. Okay, anything else about golf or the Ryder Cup before we talk a little bit of NFL?
No, that's it. I don't have a ton to say. I'm disappointed. I mean, there's golf on now, but there's really nothing good on until Tournament of Champions in January. So this will be the last segment, I would imagine, until January. So
okay.
Signing off 2018 golf season.
All right. So, but that now lends itself for future podcasts to a little bit more discussion of the NFL. We've also somehow completely skipped over MLB, which is pretty funny when you think about it. Like, they're literally in like the last two stages, the last two rounds of the playoffs, and we have not talked a lick about baseball. And I don't plan on doing it tonight either, because I haven't done any research on it. All I know is that the Dodgers have made a push, and I think the Brewers, which seems really weird to say out loud, because they've been awful, I feel like, for a long time, but I'm not sure.
I know, Milwaukee?
Yeah. So we'll have an update on that next week when we can actually research about what's going on there.
Go. If you want to know what's happening in baseball, just Google it.
Yeah.
It'll tell you. We won't.
Oh, man. Anyways, let's talk about some NFL, because there are definitely some storylines popping up as we move forward in the season, the biggest of which, Monday Night Football, Drew Brees, huge like 60-yard pass down the sideline to break the all-time passing yardage record. He now is in first place with 72,103 yards. He passed Peyton Manning and Brett Favre. Congrats to him. That's awesome. I love Drew Brees. One of my favorites. So, like, this really makes me happy.
I thought that was awesome. Yeah. I watched the game. Mm-hmm. Just for that reason. I'm not a huge Monday Night Football fan unless it's two teams that I really, really like. I'm really into the all-day Sunday type football, and then Monday, unless my fantasy depends on it or the Rams are playing, I'll watch like the second half or something like that. But
right.
I wanted to see him break this record, and I couldn't believe he did it in the first half in the fashion that he did it, right? With that big play down the sideline, leaving no doubt out there. Goes down for the touchdown, which is great because then there's a natural break in the action, so right. He didn't have to go back out there on like second four.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, they could stop and everybody could hug, and they gave him a little paper trophy. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, I saw that.
It was so weird. It's like, what is this, dude? Like, did somebody just come out and write like, congratulations, Drew Brees? And
yeah.
Like, oh yeah, here you go. Like, he grabbed it and like looked at it and was like, what is this? And like handed it to somebody on the
yeah,
side.
I know, right?
What the heck?
It seemed like almost someone like forgot what they were supposed to do, so they just wrote something down real quick and then walked out and were like, hey, just hold this around for a little bit and then we'll get you what we need to get you in a little bit, but don't worry about it. And like
exactly.
It was crazy. I don't know, and then the guy with the white gloves came up and like took the ball from him all like ceremonially and then like, you know, was just standing there with his white gloves on. It was just kind of funny overall, but obviously a huge moment. And it's, for me, it's just fun to actually see those types of things happen in our lifetime. I know we were lucky enough to see Peyton Manning also do it, which is kind of cool. But yeah, to see Drew Brees break it was awesome. And I think he's a great guy. Obviously, you know, he's maybe 6 feet tall. So that's cool to see too. Just an undersized quarterback who hurt his shoulder when he was with San Diego. And unfortunately we got rid of him. Son of a bee sting. But you know, was maybe not going to be able to play football ever again because the surgery that was required was kind of weird and confusing, but he ended up coming back from that and doing what he did now. So shout out to Drew Brees. Love that guy. So that's obviously one of the big stories. The other big story is just kind of the performances through 5 weeks. Rams, Chiefs, Saints, and Panthers seem to be like the top four teams right now. Obviously, your Rams are looking really good.
The Rams. Rams are looking really, really good. It seemed like on paper that this should be happening because they had so much momentum coming out of last year. It just kind of sputtered in the first round of the playoffs with the young teams. It's kind of understandable. But they look unstoppable.
Yeah. It's
Jared Goff is throwing darts out there. Like, he looks really, really good.
You know, he's leading the NFL in passing yards right now.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, I mean, if he's throwing like he's throwing and then Todd Gurley stays healthy – I don't know who beats that team. I think the other thing that's exciting to watch is the Chiefs just killing it. I think they made the best move ever in getting rid of Alex Smith. That was something that was criticized. People were saying, what are you doing? This guy's great. You guys were unbelievable this year with him. And even though it didn't work out in the playoffs, you should give him another shot. Who is this Pat Mahomes kid, right?
Yeah.
And he has looked
phenomenal.
Every bit of the expectations. And people are making comparisons to some of the greatest of the greats. And I watched that Monday Night Football game last week against Denver, and the way he finished that game in the fourth quarter was so stinking impressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was incredible. And then this past Sunday, he didn't have a great game. He threw a couple of interceptions and I think no TD passes, but you can tell just has such great command of the offense, right? Like he doesn't look like he hasn't – this is his first year starting. He just looks very, very good. Which is cool to see, and I feel like that's what's going to make it fun in the NFL for the next couple of years. I feel like there's a lot of good, young, talented quarterbacks, him being one of them, so that's pretty awesome. But the other two big stories are the Bengals are 4-1, and the Bears are 3-1, but somehow I just feel like that's about to fall apart. Like, I don't know. They're two of the top teams as well, but I just can't seem to wrap my brain around them actually making some moves.
The Bengals, Andy Dalton, no. I've seen that story. I've read that book like 15 times.
You've ridden that train.
I've ridden that train, man. But the Bears, Trubisky looks good.
He does. Looks very good.
Big, strong kid. He's got a good arm. He has good command of that offense. He could run when he has to. Mm-hmm. I think they're probably better than the Bengals, and I think they're on the rise.
Right.
The Bengals just seem to be a team that's just, you know.
Good point.
On the same train every year headed to nowhere land.
And the Bears now have Khalil Mack, which is amazing to me how instantly somebody can make somebody's defense that good.
Oh, like, that guy's a freak.
Unreal. And then I think the last story, and I know I mentioned it earlier, but the Browns currently have the same record as the Pittsburgh Steelers, 2-2-1.
I think the Browns story is just an incredible story.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that Baker got a chance to come in and play, and he won that game. That was so cool. And then for him to win this game this last Sunday was fantastic. So I think that obviously they're on the rise. I mean, they couldn't have gotten any worse. So
right.
That he has a 2, maybe 3 year window of a just total buffer to be mediocre.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they could totally be 4-12 for 3 straight years, and people be like, yeah, you know, but that was better than we were the previous 4 years. But after that, he's going to have to start doing something. So, you know, what a great opportunity for Baker to really prove himself in the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's going to be interesting to keep our eye on, and we'll definitely have updates as we go. But one other story I wanted to bring up, which is really cool, not only for this kid, but also for the Pac-12. Guess who is leading all rookie running backs in yards?
All the rookie running backs in yards. I don't know.
Philip Lindsay from the University of Colorado. 5'8", 190 pounds. He was drafted in like the fourth round to the Broncos or whatever. Fifth round, sixth round, late, whatever it may be. But he's got more than Saquon Barkley. He's got more than Sonny Michel, Kerryon Johnson, Royce Freeman, Nick Chubb, all the guys that were supposed to be like top dogs.
Mm-hmm.
He's leading. 328 yards rushing on the season as a rookie.
Yeah, is he splitting time with Royce Freeman too? I think Royce Freeman is supposed to take that job.
Yeah, and he's an Oregon guy. Two Pac-12 guys on the same team. It's incredible. So, kind of a cool story. A lot of fun. Former Colorado buff, so some good Pac-12 stuff there as well. And then, like I said, your boy, Jared Goff, is leading the NFL in passing yards from Cal.
Yep.
A lot of good representation right now.
He looks so good. He's just so accurate. And he's got such a big arm, too.
And Sean McVay is a genius.
Genius. I love him. He's our age.
That makes me a little sad. Do you think he talks about life insurance and wearing sunscreen and getting blood drawn?
All the time.
Okay. All right, good.
That's actually part of his, like, rah-rah halftime speech.
Oh, yeah. He's like, hey,
let's go out there. I don't know what they say in halftime speeches, but go get your blood drawn.
Oh, man. Anywho, so that wraps up the NFL talk, unless you got anything else you want.
Nope, we'll keep it going. It can replace golf, so we should have a little spot for it moving forward, for sure.
The other thing, which I'm just really not thinking that we're going to get into anytime soon, is that basketball is starting. NBA preseason literally started this week, which is crazy to me.
Crazy. I mean, it's cool. I can't wait for the season to start, but it's not really important until December.
Yeah, exactly. Anywho, then let's move on to the Blitz Package, a segment where anything goes. I only have one, and it's from the weekend. More of a follow-up from what we've talked about on the podcast a lot, but...
I have one. You want me to go?
Yeah, you go first.
I have one, and I'm going to try something.
Okay.
I don't know if this is going to work.
Okay.
But I'm going to try it anyway. I want you to tell me, because I had this conversation last night with my wife, and I thought this was a good question. Who do you think is the better narrator, Sam Elliott or Morgan Freeman? And I want to play a couple clips.
Okay.
And I want to see if people can hear us. If they can't, then we'll just move on.
Okay, good.
The distances between them. The reason, both were spheres. But it would be many centuries before we had the tools to extend our vision.
There we go.
And confirm the wisdom of these early thinkers.
Okay.
In the meantime.
So that's Morgan Freeman.
Okay.
Let's hear Sam Elliott. Hey, we're getting pretty technical on this podcast here.
Yeah, this is tricky stuff.
All right.
A collection of treasures lies between these bumpers. Legendary engines. Industry gold. Awards out the tailpipe.
Dang, that southern drawl is pretty impressive. I'm such a fan of, like, western stuff, too, that, like, the way he talks makes it feel like you're walking down a dusty road into, like, some pub or something about to get in a bar fight with Phil Mickelson in a cowboy hat. Like, that's what's happening when he talks in my head.
By the way, world-famous mustache.
Really?
Oh, yeah, you kidding me?
I don't really know what he looks like, but...
Oh, dude, if you Google Sam Elliott and Roadhouse...
Okay.
He is, like... He's known for his handlebar mustache, so that might take him over the top.
Oh, wow, yeah, that's impressive.
Right?
But,
I don't know, I watched The Ranch on Netflix, and he's one of the characters, and his voice is just so, like, it just, like, shakes your bones, it's so good, but then I listened to Morgan Freeman, and I thought, man, that's good, too.
So here's the thing, I feel like Morgan Freeman can do more. Right, like he can be a part of more things because he doesn't have a specific southern drawl sound.
It's very true, very true.
So his universality, is that a word? I think it's pretty
sure.
Good.
Sure.
Yeah. Oh man, but that's good. I love Morgan Freeman's voice. I think I got to go Morgan Freeman.
Okay. Well, yeah. Just I'm gonna go Sam Elliott. I think it's just. It's just that deep, like you said, Western type sound just reminds me of, like you said, Tombstone or any of those movies that he's in. So, and the mustache is just incredible.
All right. So mine is actually from about this past weekend because we have talked a lot about us losing bets and needing to do beer soup. And we hadn't actually ever done one. But then a part of the Beer Olympics at the bachelor party was a beer soup relay. So I just want your opinion on beer soup. Was it bad or was it the worst?
I think it was the worst.
Really?
Yeah, like for me, you know me. Gosh, I know some people don't listen to this podcast, but most drinking type things don't faze me.
Right.
Like I can do most things and I'm done most of those things. So I've been used to it. It's not that weird. But that just... The air and the foam and everything really threw me off, man. Like,
yeah.
I was in survival mode is really all I was trying to do is not puke.
Yeah, no, I feel you. So we should maybe paint the picture of what it was. So what we did was it was a two-man relay. You had to beer soup, which is you had to pour a beer into a bowl and then eat the beer with a spoon, and then bear crawl, flip cup, bear crawl back, and then your partner did the same thing, and it was all a time trial. And the beer soup, you're right, it doesn't seem like it's going to be that hard, and then you get about five scoops in, and you're like, wow, this is brutal. Like, and we didn't even do a full beer. That's why we didn't do a full beer, because it would have been terrible. Like, you just immediately want to throw up, because there's so much gas and, like, air in your stomach that, like, there's only one way to go, and it's not a good way. So,
way to start the day, though.
It was. It was a lot. Yeah, yeah. I mean, 9 a.m. came quick, but we had to do it. That was what we had.
You got to kickstart the day somehow.
But overall, the Beer Olympics was a great time. Anything else before we move on?
No. No, I'm good, man. Great time this last weekend. And Pac-12 is getting exciting.
Definitely. It's getting really exciting. Let's combine our two Blitz Package questions real quick. Who do you think Morgan Freeman or Samuel Peck would win in a beer soup competition?
Sam Elliott.
Why do I call him Sam Peck?
I don't know.
Maybe that's his middle name. Let me check.
Right now or in their prime?
In their prime.
Okay. I'm going to say Sam Elliott, yeah. Regardless of the fact that half of that soup is getting caught in the mustache. Right? Like, he might not have to eat as much because it's all just going to get stuck right there.
Right.
And Morgan Freeman just didn't seem like that type of guy. Like, that would be something he would be into in his youth.
True. It's a good point.
The personality is very different. Even if they were older and you said, who would do it better right now? I would say Sam Elliott, because Morgan Freeman's like 117.
Agreed.
It would be really, really hard to be your super into that old.
Agreed. Yeah, I think Sam Elliott would win. He just, like you said, that Western picture gets in my head, and I feel like those guys just, they'll consume beer however they have to. And if it's with a spoon out of a bowl, they'll do it. So, and I think he does have a pretty significant advantage with the mustache. He doesn't actually have to consume a lot of it, which would allow him to bear crawl faster because his belly isn't as full. It's just kind of stashed up there in the stash.
I want to listen to him like talk trash to each other.
Like, that would be so good.
Like a UFC fight, like when they line up and they're like, "You," and they go back and forth, like, but in like their prestigious voices.
Yeah,
like,
that would be.
Best trash talking of all time.
That we didn't even talk about that. Speaking of UFC fighting, we didn't even talk about the fight. We got some time.
That was. I was shocked. Like, what a great purchase. First of all, the fight was a good fight. Although Khabib kind of dominated for the most part. He just took him to the ground, and Conor just really can't grapple that well, or as well as Khabib did. But what happened at the end was insane.
It was insanity.
I mean. I guess what my buddy told me is that Connor's actually jumped to the cage before after other people's teams. I didn't know that either. So this is actually not the first time somebody's done that. When I saw it, I was like, this is Malice in the Palace all over again. This is something that is like, nope, the world hasn't seen a professional fighter jump over the cage and just start throwing blows at people. Now, granted, he went after Connor's like fighting coach or something like that. He was also a fighter. It's not like he was fighting fans like Ron Artest was.
True.
But the crazier part was somebody jumped into the cage.
I think that's what's crazier to me, right? Like, somebody hopped over and sucker punched McGregor.
In the cage. Like, you're stuck in the cage with McGregor. Like, granted, he's a little dizzy.
Right.
He got choked out, but that's I think that, by the way, both of those guys that jumped in the cage and started the fight, Connor got arrested.
Really?
Yeah, so they're getting charged. I don't know if Khabib's getting charged at all, but those two guys got arrested.
Damn, that's crazy. Did you see the way that Khabib entered the crowd? Double foot jump, like,
dude,
kick.
Photo, that's one of the best photos of all time.
Insane. In absolute insanity.
I want to buy that poster.
Yeah, I mean, I was rooting for McGregor, so like that would be hard for me to have his poster up, but that picture is sick.
It's like that photo of LeBron dunking the ball after Dwayne Wade just gave him the alley-oop and he's like running away with his hands out. You know that poster?
Yep.
Just like one of those shots that's like iconic.
Yeah. So sick. Oh, man. Awesome. Crazy. Awesome. Great weekend. That fight really contributed to it. Anyways, that wraps up this segment of the Blitz Package and this podcast overall. Kyle, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
All right. You know, same time next week.
All right. See ya.
her out, cause she's loving bad. Down on my knees and ask my Lord to keep me clear from the devil, cause my girl, she's on fire.